Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Influence Unplugged. I am so excited to be here with you. My name is Lindsay Watson, and so happy to have our guest, Dr. Christopher Hunt from Moravian University. Now, most of you know Chris is Dr. Hunt. I actually call him Dr. Cuz because we share a similar last name. Dr. Hunt, it's so exciting to have you here. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for the invitation, and I'm just completely honored and humbled to be among your first guests.
We made it, didn't we?
It's happening.
Yeah. And this is the biggest part of why I feel so honored to host this show, is to really honor Black leaders in community. Mm-hmm. We talk so much about what we do. Mm-hmm. And people recognize our faces, mm-hmm. right? We're often still the only or a few in the communities and crowds we serve in. But behind the scenes, all the things that have led to what we do is what we're really going to talk about tonight. Mm-hmm. So let's just get started. Why don't you tell us, if you can, a little bit about your journey? We know that you are the Vice President of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion for Moravian University, everyone. Okay, shout out for that, right? Yeah. If you know the history of Moravian, you know Moravian University is a big deal, and you've been a part of that entire transition. And we know that you serve on so many different community organizations. You're a public speaker. You're constantly on panels. You're very involved with LINC. But who is Dr. Hunt? Can you talk to us a little bit about your journey and what led you here to the Lehigh Valley of all places on earth?
Okay. We have half an hour?
Yeah. Give us as much as you can with the time we have.
I mean, my late father was a pastor in Allentown, and my mom was a school teacher. And so she was in the East Emory Area School District from the late 70s through 2007. And so they relocated from New York State to the Lehigh Valley in the late 70s, early 80s.
Wow.
And so we remained sort of residents of Pennsylvania, but also in many ways, New York State.
Yeah.
And so I sort of commute back and forth with family. But I've been here going through the Bethlehem Area School District, working here and living in the region, you know, for the duration of my life. Graduated from Liberty High School.
Okay, I was just about to ask. We got to shout out the high school.
Yeah. Proud graduate of Liberty High School, played football there, left and went to Westchester for the first part of my undergraduate degree.
Okay, good school.
Yes. And then I ended up finishing at East Stroudsburg, and then I went back to Westchester to earn my master's degree, and then eventually earned my doctorate degree from East Stroudsburg. So sort of back and forth journey.
Okay, so from Westchester to ESU, back and forth. What was it about your journey when it came to education? Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly you have a foundation, right? You were raised by educators.
Right.
So there's that. What was that spark in you that caused you to want to go all the way to becoming Dr. Hunt? A lot of people are great with bachelor's, and master's is like, you know, a little more rare, but then that doctor level, that's a very unique experience. Can you talk to us a little bit about that journey?
Sure. Yeah. The foundation behind it was my mom being an educator. That's correct.
Yeah.
And as I was in high school trying to think about what I wanted my future to be, I thought about education. That's what I knew. Mm. But I wasn't sure if I wanted to be a school teacher or something else. And so I really admired counseling work. And so I thought I wanted to be a high school guidance counselor.
Okay.
And so when I first went to college, I was planning to major in psychology. Then I took intro psych, and I didn't really rock with it. So I did a couple detours, but ultimately was able to graduate from college and then pursue higher ed administration as my master's degree. I got very involved as a college student.
Okay.
And so I was one of those student leaders who did everything. President of the Black Student Union. I wrote for the school newspaper, student government. I was a three-year RA and other kinds of things. And then I realized you can actually make a sort of a career out of doing that work.
Yeah.
And so that's how I landed in higher education.
Okay. So did you have any mentors outside of family or inspirations along the way that helped you to be able to identify, hey, this is what I want to do, and this is what I love?
Yes. So when I went to Westchester, I started off in a summer bridge program.
Okay.
And so it was called the Academic Development Program. Mm. And it was a six-week program that sort of got you immersed in what the college experience was going to be before college actually started. And when I first started that program, I identified a young Black professional who was at the time the assistant director of Multicultural Affairs.
Okay. Yep.
He just, you know, he looked like me. You know, he was a young Black man as a professional, though. He had actually gone to Westchester. And I just appreciated, you know, his presence. And I appreciated how he was trying to look out for younger Black men who were in college and the women as well. I mean, he was there for everybody. There was something about how he moved and what he was doing that I really admired.
Yeah.
And it looked like success to me. It just looked, you know, he was in education. He was everything that he was doing on behalf of students and specifically Black and brown students,
wow.
You know, and also trying to educate all the students, the white students and everyone. But he was definitely there to make sure that the Black and brown students didn't fall through the cracks. So there was something about that I really, that was foundational for me as I was starting college.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So usually I'd go chronologically, but you just kind of set the tone for what you do now.
Mm-hmm.
So for everyone listening, I want you to pause and listen now. Dr. Hunt is actually an award-winning professional. A couple years ago, and I think this is where you and I initially met, was at the African American Chamber Gala, mm-hmm. and you won an award. And I remember coming up to you and saying, congratulations, because the award specifically was for the work you do for Black and brown young men in this community. So let's connect the dots. We'll fill in the in-between later, but let's connect the dots now. Can you talk about your career readiness program, what spark you got to start that, and what you're doing with it now?
Sure, sure. Well, I might twist it up a little bit because certainly the mentor that I identified when I was in college, he was a model of success. So that was one. That's one ingredient for the Black and Latino Male College Readiness Program. The other ingredient is my doctoral studies. So let me pause and say what it is. We, every summer, we bring rising 10th, 11th, and 12th grade young men to campus for a week-long immersive pre-college experience. And so we bring them to campus for 5 days and four nights. We bring local mentors from the Lehigh Valley region, other Black and brown professionals. We bring them to campus and we get the two groups to interact.
Amazing.
Yeah. The professional men are paired with the high school young men. You know, they're talking to them about the college enrollment process.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking to them about being a Black or brown young man as a college student. They are discussing sexual misconduct prevention.
Nice.
Having really difficult conversations, talking to them about policing. We have our chief of police, who is a man of color, who comes and participates in that conversation.
So important.
Yes. And we talk to them about financial planning and financial literacy.
Okay.
On all kinds of other topics. And then we also just have them have one-on-one opportunities to connect with models of success. That's what the program is all about. So we want for them to feel like the sky is the limit.
So your doctoral journey, can you talk to us a little bit about how that inspired you to design this program?
Yeah. The title of my dissertation was called When Millennials Meet Baby Boomers, Multiple Case Study on the Experiences of Black Male College Students.
Wow.
In my 12th academic year at Moravian, in two different stints. I was there for several years. I left and I came back to assume the role that I'm in now. When I was there previously, I would work with young men, young Black and brown men, who were telling me about some of their experiences.
Hmm.
And then I would have a connection with one of our Board of Trustee members who was a graduate from the class of 74.
Okay.
And anecdotally, I was sort of hearing some of the same challenges, some of the same situations. I felt like that sounded like it could be an interesting study.
Yeah.
And so in my research, I have two research sites, different colleges, universities. One's a private school, one's a state university. But at those different sites, I got a chance to interview and work with men who graduated in the 60s and 70s, Black men. And then men who graduated from those same schools, but in like the 2000s and 2010s.
Mm.
So in a span of 40 to 50 years, the question was, how have the lived experiences of Black male college students and the cultures of their institutions changed over that span of time?
Yeah.
And so from my oldest participant to my youngest participant was a span of 57 years.
Wow.
So you think about the advances we've made in society over 57 years, transportation, communication, medicine. I mean, you go down the list.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, in 57 years, have the experiences of Black male college students improved? It was not a very sophisticated question, but it was a very profound question, I thought. And with some exceptions, if, for example, a young Black or brown man from the baby boomer generation went to school in an area where they had more resources and went to college, there was less of a culture shock. And I found the same thing true for millennials as well. But there were few instances of men who went to school with lots of resources. Generally speaking, I heard the same experiences over that span of time. Yeah. They felt inside the classroom, they felt alienated, they felt isolated, they didn't feel like they belonged. They felt like they had to represent on behalf of the entire race.
Yeah.
And there was a major culture shock. The one caveat was that if they had some sort of introduction to what navigating that space was going to be before they got to college, that was the only way that they experienced less culture shock.
Wow.
So the reason for the Black and Latino Male College Readiness Program is, yes, I found a mentor that looked like me when I was going to college, and he was very, very inspirational for me, and this doctoral research that I just talked about.
This is amazing, and here's why. We often feel as though we're the only ones, especially in this community, and things are changing in the Lehigh Valley, but oftentimes we're still the only or one of a few.
Right.
And so to be able to give the people standing on our shoulders a heads up in terms of preparation, what to expect, the culture,
right,
of working within an environment where they may be the only or a handful, even as that's progressing, is so powerful. I know I didn't have that.
I didn't
have that training. Did you? Did you have? Right. And so I love that the motivation for you is based off of data, one, because numbers don't lie, y'all. And we know we need that data to be able to make quality decisions, right? But also you being able to see an opportunity to kind of fill a gap and say, okay, y'all gonna be here anyway. Let's make the most of helping you, not just from how to interview, how to shake a hand, right? The traditional kind of career readiness, but from a cultural perspective.
Yes.
We want to make sure you're good,
yes,
that you're mentally strong, that you know what to expect, that nothing is a surprise to you, and that you have resources and a support system to help you thrive.
That's right.
And men, young men, need their own space.
Yes.
I am an auntie and a godmother. And when I think about my babies, especially my nephews, I want to make sure they know that they are valued as they are and that they have their own space just as much as my niece and just as much as the young women in my community.
Right?
It's equal, but separate spaces is so important.
Yes.
And so I just want to acknowledge that to everyone listening in. We acknowledge everyone here.
Thank you.
On Influence Unplugged.
Yes, thank you.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your journey in the Lehigh Valley. So you've been here. Left a little bit, came back. You didn't have to come back. There were plenty of other places you could have settled. What brought you back? What keeps you here, in addition to all the amazing things you're doing?
Right. Yeah, I have a friend who does some amazing work in this area as well. And he's had the opportunity to go other places. And he said, but the work needs to be done here too, right? The work needs to be done here. And so that's what keeps me here. In addition to the personal, I mean, my mom is here, my family is here, you know, that's number one. But professionally, the work has to be done here. And I am blessed and fortunate to have the space to do it, to have some really amazing partners who do the work with me.
Yeah.
And when you are in this space, the collaboration is the only way that I know how to get the work done, is to be able to work across the region with other folks who are committed.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me uplifted as well.
So, okay, you said something we're flowing, we're vibing right now, Dr. Hunt, because here's why. I was immediately going to jump into the faith part of your life, and you said you're blessed and fortunate. Right. I'm like,
there it is.
He set me up.
Yeah.
Because it's such an important foundation for both of us,
right?
Can you talk to us about your journey with your faith, how it's connected to what you do, but also your involvement in the faith-based community here?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for that, because it also gives me an opportunity to talk about the pursuit of my terminal degree. one of the reasons for it was my late pastor, Pastor Fred Davis. Ah. And at the time, Lindsay, I barely had my bachelor's degree. Mm. I didn't even have my master's degree. I think I was maybe halfway done with my master's degree at the time.
Okay.
And he said to me, Chris, I don't care if you get your doctorate degree in basket weaving. Get your doctorate degree.
I love it.
Coming from a man who I don't think touched college. Mm. You know, he was successful in so many different ways. But he understood the value and the power of education, especially for Black men. You know, he spoke that on me. And I remember I was actually sitting, I was at his son's house at the time, who was now the senior pastor of the church. I'll talk about him in a second. But the house was crowded. I remember I was sitting on the floor.
Wow.
I was sitting on the carpet, and he was sitting in his chair. So I was literally sitting at his feet.
At his feet.
Right. And he's sharing this wisdom with me at the time.
Wow.
And that always stuck with me. And also I understood that in higher education spaces, if you desire to have some longevity and have more areas of influence,
you
have to have the terminal degree.
Okay.
More times than not, I'll say that.
Okay.
And especially the idea that, you know, you're trying to do this as a person of color.
Yeah.
You need to make sure your credentials are tight.
Yeah.
And that you can be in the room and have a conversation with someone else who has a terminal degree. Because in higher ed, everyone has, you know, in the faculty, everyone has a PhD. So anyway, I wouldn't have been able to do that or any of this without my faith and my relationship with Christ. And it was instilled in me as a child. And so that's always been foundational to me. I haven't always leaned into it. And there was a season as an adult where I was like, I think I got this. I think I got this.
We've all been there, haven't we? Like, I'm good. I got this.
And I think I was like, you sure? And he showed me.
Hmm.
And what I mean by that is I hit some major challenges, some pretty big hurdles and challenges. And God was like, so now what do you think? And I surrendered.
Yeah.
Right. And so my faith walk is very much why this work that I do and even the Black and Latino program is possible, because he has surrounded me with so many opportunities that I now have this responsibility to do his work in the community.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so on my wall, I have a picture. You can't see anyone's face, but I have a picture of an image of someone who you just see their torso and their arm. You've probably seen this before, but they've clearly climbed a wall and gotten over a wall, and they're reaching down, and all you see is their torso and their arm over the wall, and they're pulling up someone who has their hand up trying to get over the wall.
Mm.
And that picture is prominent on my wall, and that's sort of how I do my work. And the only reason I'm able to do that is because God has blessed me so much.
I love that. And you know what I love, Dr. Hunt? You said you have a responsibility. It's not a burden.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because I think sometimes we do so much work that we forget that we're divinely inspired to do it, and it's not supposed to be burdensome to us, right? It's a task. It's a calling, right? It's a responsibility, but nothing that's burdensome. Right. And I love that, because sometimes it doesn't always feel easy.
Sure.
And you'd also talked about the collaboration, which I want to hone in on, because we in the corporate culture, I'll just say, often are taught we got to figure out how to climb the ladder ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case, right? It's easier to do things with others, but to be able to identify who's strong where, right? So you can kind of help each other. So would you mind talking a little bit about the journey that you've had with collaborating with others and how that's resulted in success for what you're doing now?
Yeah. So for me, working on a college campus, I learned pretty early on in my career that everything starts with the relationship.
Mm.
Being able to look someone in the eye and have an exchange, have a rapport, and then make good on whatever your word is.
Yeah.
And so a big part of my collaboration happens right on campus with campus partners. Those are folks in the faculty. Those are other administrative offices. Students are central to the collaboration, because when you're trying to work on behalf of students, there's nothing stronger than a student being your ambassador for other students.
Sure.
They trust their peers and classmates more than they trust any, you know, adult.
Absolutely. Who's around.
So that's number one. Number two, within higher ed, it's always important to have relationships with other institutions, with other folks who are doing similar work, share notes and collaborate in that way. And also to vent.
Yep.
And to get some uplift, that's always important. Here in the Lehigh Valley, there's a small but growing and strong group of professionals in the equity and inclusion space.
Mm-hmm. Good people.
Amazing people, yeah. with big hearts, mm-hmm. and solid strategy.
Yeah.
Data-driven, as you mentioned before.
Oh, yeah.
very, very talented folks. And it's for me as someone in the education sector, it's really good to hear how the work is being done in other spaces. Mm. It's helpful to hear what the corporate lingo is, what some of the other kinds of nonprofits are doing.
Yeah.
It's also helpful to know about different structures. You know, you might have some of the work happening in this department with a particular scope. You might have it being done at a different level of the organization. Some of our friends that we're both acquainted with do the work internationally.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is a whole nother dynamic.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, but it's good to feed off of that.
That's right.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but, you know, I think that when you are diversity, equity, inclusion professional, especially in this climate, you need to have different folks in your sphere of influence who can help you articulate the message to the broader community.
Yeah.
And also people who don't necessarily look like me. The fact of the matter is I can be in a space, and especially here in the Lehigh Valley, I can be in a space and say one thing on the in the equity and inclusion space.
Yeah.
And I can have a white female peer or a white male peer say the same thing in that Lehigh Valley space. And because of the privilege that they may hold in that moment, they may be able to articulate that point better than I. Well, they might be able to resonate.
Yeah.
More than I can.
That's such a great perspective, because we truly are all in this together. Mm-hmm. Right. And we are still willfully showing up to have these kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. And you want to be able to acknowledge who can say the same thing, but maybe have a greater impact in that moment.
Right.
Right. Right. In the moment. Because that literally it's never about us when we come together to collab. It's about the mission and what we want to accomplish.
Right.
So I love that. Now, we're still talking about collab and community. And there's someone you mentioned you wanted to talk about. And I got you. I got you.
When you say cuz, we are.
It's a whole thing.
The same name, same state.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
So one of, I would say my number one mentor in my life today is Dr. Philip Davis, mm-hmm. the senior pastor of Greater Shiloh Church. And he has been a mentor of mine now for over 20 years.
Wow.
Since I started attending Shiloh. When you talk about a community partner, collaborator.
What?
That's what he does.
It's
that's
like,
him.
That's literally him, right?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And so not only is he an amazing faith leader in our church, mm-hmm. you know, he has the title senior pastor. He's also an incredible CEO because the community work that Greater Shiloh is doing, where we are partnering with local government agencies, including the county, to build affordable housing in Easton. We paid off a 30-year church mortgage 10 years early last year, so that now we're now able to move into imagining what a phase two sort of community center would look like, to have a larger footprint there in Easton. This community center would house all kinds of youth empowerment programs, for computer coding, for after-school activities, for reading and literacy programs, for building a counseling center on the premises with licensed therapists. You know, the vision is long, and it reflects what God wants us to do once again in the community.
In the community, because it serves and covers everyone.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So, okay, with the 1 minute we have left, this has just been amazing, and we could go on and on.
Yeah.
I'm asking everyone, if you could just have one desire, what would you want to see happen in the Lehigh Valley for 2025?
Well, it's a great question and one that has a long answer.
Do your best.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I would want us to have a larger focus on the school districts that serve the students who have the highest needs. Because if we don't invest in our education for kids, we're just not giving them the best chance to succeed as adults.
I love that, because this is so important. From the heart, everyone, Dr. Chris Hunt, if you, as you're listening, just give a round of applause.
Yep. Thank you.
We can feel it. It's been such a pleasure
having
you on Influence Unplugged. I'm here with Dr. Chris Hunt, Vice President of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion at Moravian University and a very involved community leader. Thank you so much again for joining us.
Thank you.